You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Recording. Blues Brothers. Chunk. Farts. Pickled pig's feet.
Truffle shuffle.
I love the hairiness.
Oh, cocks.
Kevin likes hairy dicks.
Wow. That's very inappropriate, sir.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Short Box. A lot of mouth shit going on with us right now. You can hear that. A lot of guys having fun. You know, we're having fun. And this show is about fun. But this in particular show is our next installment in the history of Marvel comic books. And today we're going to tackle what people have called the Dark Age.
Ooh, yes.
Or the Age of Darkness, if you want to be politically correct.
And just a quick side note, I did have some dental work done, so if I don't sound my usual glorious self, that's probably why, but I rushed over here after seeing two fantastic dental people. Mm-hmm. Guys, you did a great job, and thank you for all of your help. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate the child's dentistry place that I go to for taking care of my adult teeth.
Whoa. That's right.
Well, what are the doctor's names?
I know you had to call me out on that.
The guy's having a stroke right now. And you want him to remember names.
Yeah, like the whole left side of my face.
Look, it's just lidocaine. I've been through it before. It's not too bad.
Have you?
Yes. Have you? You know, your gums get numb, side of your face gets numb.
So when I hear lidocaine, I always think of like iocane, or what was it from Princess Bride? When he's like, I bet my life on it.
Iocane powder or something like that.
I bet my life on it.
Yep.
Oh, hey, yeah. It's all derivatives of cocaine, so it's all good.
Ah, the canes. So anyway, yeah, back, getting dark with cocaine. The Dark Age, which we've kind of assessed that it was pretty much, the 85 to about 1999?
Yeah, more or less.
The cusp of the millennium and all that.
More or less.
So, the Dark Age, Kevin, I'm going to throw it to you. Tell us a little bit about what was going on in the Dark Age at this time.
Well, we have to go and visit a rival company real quick, because there was a big influence upon everyone.
Valiant. Yep, totally. Valiant was huge.
Well, yes, to a point. Yes, indeed. No doubt about it.
But you're not talking about that.
We're not talking about the
Dark Horse.
Yeah, Dark Horse. That started during this period of time. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I was talking about DC Comics.
Never heard of them.
They had...
Did they do those hippity hop albums?
No. Huh. You're thinking
this
of
a political
else.
Thing,
thinking
DC?
You're thinking of Run DMC, sir.
Oh, okay.
Which was out during that era.
Well, it's tricky.
You know, indeed. You had two very important books or series of books come out during that time. First, you had The Dark Knight Returns from Frank Miller,
right?
Which basically got Batman out of that Adam West, goofy but fun caricature of the character.
It made him dark again.
Yeah. Basically, got him back to his old 1939, 1940s roots where. Mm-hmm. You know, you had that film noir type look on the panels. Things got really serious, more adult like.
And Denny O'Neill was also a big part
Denny
of it.
Denny O'Neill is a big part of it. Yeah, absolutely.
But we'll get to the DC shit.
On the DC history.
DC history books.
You dive into some questions.
Yeah.
Yes. And also Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' Watchmen was also a major influence.
That was a huge seminal piece right there. That was a 12-part maxi series.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. That changed a lot about comic books and the comic book landscape. And then it led towards the resurgence of Swamp Thing, also because of Alan Moore.
Right.
And how they redefined who Swamp Thing actually was as a hero.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was fantastic, fantastic run.
Well, also just as we're saying dark, we also mean the tone. Everything did get a little darker at this point.
More adult themes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the costumes. Costumes mm-hmm. became darker. Inking with the way that they were drawn mm-hmm. became darker.
Or
it's just all dark.
Even on whatever your opinion is on it, whether it's sexist or not, more revealing costumes for women for sure.
Absolutely.
Like they definitely were selling the sexuality.
Psylocke, perfect example.
Psylocke was a huge one. Pretty much at one point, I think every member of the X-Men, like a female, had like a thong at one point. Like I just remember, like I was like, everybody has thongs now.
Why is everybody fighting in their swimsuits, Daddy?
That doesn't seem comfortable, but for some reason, I'm a 13-year-old boy, and I'm okay with it.
And my pants are tight.
Yeah.
Well, what they're doing kind of made sense because many of the baby boomers who grew up with their comics in the late 50s and all the way through the 60s and 70s were still reading comics. So it kind of made sense to essentially grow up with them.
They're still reading comics now.
They're still reading comics now, yes.
They're them and us. We're it, right. Basically.
Basically boomers, Gen Xers, Zennials like us, and early millennials are the core base.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we talked about the Bronze Age with this explosion of creativity that came from the explosion of the Silver Age, but now with this Dark Age, it was kind of like anything goes.
Yes.
You know, they were trying everything.
Adult format style books.
Hence Vertigo, and we'll get to that at a later point.
Epic, the creation of Epic, which was creator-owned and also very dark.
Yes, correct. Right. And basically another thing that's very interesting, Jim Shooter was let go from Marvel during this period of time, right? I could say right around the time when the Dark Ages of Marvel were beginning. He went, of course, to start Valiant, as you mentioned.
Uh-huh. Which I will say now, looking back on it as a comic fan, hurt them.
Yes.
As far as
quality control. He was the ultimate quality control man.
Quality control and continuity control.
That's
Jim
correct.
Shooter was huge on...
And Chris Claremont definitely appreciated that.
Right.
And we appreciated that. Mr. Shooter, we appreciated that very much.
Yes.
Totally. We'd love to have you on if you were ever interested.
For sure.
It'd be an honor to have you on. Yes, indeed. And this is where Tom DeFalco, his replacement, came into play. And he, I guess you could say, would be one of the people responsible for how things went down in the late 80s and certainly through the 90s, as we're just going to print out more copies of books and we're going to expand certain characters and give them multiple books.
God damn, and I couldn't keep up.
Yeah,
and they tied them all together.
Yes.
Uh-huh. It's like...
I'm going to get into that with a crossover.
Yeah.
Where they literally... Well, because what it was at this point, it was about printing money.
Yes. And his...
Or ways to print money. Like, what, you know, ideas or gimmicks, which were huge gimmicks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And his plan, when he came in, he decided to give the editors essentially full control. So if they had problems with writers, no problem. Writers get fired. They go. Editors were also getting incentives.
Well, didn't Tom used to be an editor before he... Yeah. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So editors were basically given more, shall we say, creative freedom in that respect. So if editors said, hey, I want this done in this book, it had to be done. Yeah,
it's like if you ever work in a restaurant, and I know there's a ton of people in the Midwest that have, you'll know that anytime a waitress is like bumped up to becoming a manager or assistant manager, mm-hmm. all the rights start to turn towards the wait staff.
Right.
Like everything starts to become more catered towards them.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing if a cook rises to the top.
Right.
It, more things start to cater towards the cooks.
Right.
It's that
it's
natural
interesting.
It's that
yeah.
natural affinity, you know. I relate more to these
right
type of
as an editor. I saw the way things were going down. I didn't like it, so we're going to stop this right now.
Right.
Now, what I didn't even plan to bring this guy up, but I can't not. Mark Gruenwald was to me such the funny thing is I read that he was a huge Justice League fan, but he was always so ingrained in Marvel. Like, as I think he was an assistant editor at one point, and he was a writer for many years, but he never got to write for DC. But apparently he had, like, a crazy knowledge of, like, Justice League covers. Like, you could name any cover, and he would tell you what number it was.
Or, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. But he really, I think, with a definite, maybe, I don't know if he was undershooter at one point. I think he was. He definitely kept that continuity going that Jim Shooter started. And he, I mean, we've talked about it before. He wrote... He's my favorite Captain America writer. He wrote Cap from like 3-something to like 4-5.
Until he died.
Until he died.
Mm.
Yeah. And on another side note, he was one of the people who, he didn't create the Squadron Supreme, but he did pretty much their most popular story around this time. It was a 12-issue maxi series. A lot of maxi series that were going on around this time. And this is how cool Mark Gruenwald is, how much of a diehard comic fan he was. When he died, he asked that his ashes be put into the ink of a comic book.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So when they came out with the Squadron Supreme, the maxi series, a graphic novel with a really great Alex Ross cover, his ashes were mixed into the ink of all those presses. So if you have one of those, which I do, I would never get rid of it because, one, I love the story and I love Mark Gruenwald. He literally put himself
in the book.
Now you own a piece of him.
Exactly.
Quite literally. Wow, isn't that something?
Yeah.
But so there were guys like that that were kind of keeping it glued together, although it was very hard to do.
Now, let me ask you guys something real quick. Let's say I go first. I've always wanted to be cremated and baked into cookies.
Right.
Now my question is, would both of you guys do the honor of eating me? If I baked, had my wishes being baked into cookies. You can put me in whatever cookie you like, peanut butter, chocolate chip, whatever.
I'd be 50-50 split on it.
I think I feel the same way, too.
If you gave me enough drinks, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to eat a Donald cookie.
So it's interesting. You want to be baked. I want the White Walker treatment. I want to be frozen.
No, oh, I want to be baked into cookies.
I want to be put in a Luke Cage comic book.
Luke Cage comic book?
But I want them to reissue, like, an old one. I don't know how they would do this.
So wait a second. I thought your first one would have been, like, a Captain Marvel or a special Black Adam issue. That's where you want to be put in.
Well, I already have Black Adam tattooed on my body, so I'm
so he's going
I'm
to grave with you yeah, regardless.
I'm
that's
covered
true.
On Black Adam.
That's true.
No, I think I'd like to be in the mix of a Luke Cage comic book. But it would have to be, like, the one issue where they put him back in his classic costume.
Hmm.
That's the only way I'll accept it.
Okay.
But now let's, what were some of the...
Well, one of the big highlights, as well, what I call it highlights, some people would say, a lot of comic book purists would say lowlights, would be the fact that DeFalco was one of the people responsible for, like I said, the expansion of books.
Right.
But not in the best of ways, where, let's say, Spider-Man had one book, now he has four.
That's the, right, Peter Parker's Spectacular.
Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, and then later on, in 1990, you had the Spider-Man.
Oh, the McFarlane, yeah.
And also, he was responsible with expanding the X-Men into multiple books. Okay, we're going to do one for X-Factor. We're going to do X-Force. We're going to do this and that. And Chris Claremont was upset that, you know, you keep diluting these characters that he loved so much. You're going to keep getting a random book here. We got another book here. And... That,
if I could say anything for this time of the Dark Age, overkill.
Yes, overkill.
Which
character and overproduction. What issue did he appear in?
Exactly. Actually, there was Spawn.
Yes.
Had a guy named Overkill. Overkill.
There we go.
But not Marvel. But just over... Which... It's like they need, and which is the opposite of how it is now in comic books. And I wish they found a medium because at this point it was overkill where it's like, why is this book going on for 100 issues? Where now it's like they give a book like, what, 10 issues, if that?
And if it doesn't
and
produce
if it doesn't
a certain
sell
amount,
like a certain amount, it's just
you go.
Gone.
You're done.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter if it's got a fan base, like, you know, if it's just not making the money.
Fool Killer. Did you guys tell me Fool Killer's latest edition was really good? And
it was
they
a
just,
great comic.
And
yeah.
they just killed it.
Marvel. You guys suck right now. I don't care about your diversity. I don't care. I'm just tired of because it's a controversy.
Right.
And I'm just tired of you canceling good shit.
Right.
They're way worse than DC. Way worse. Like they've canceled three titles I love dearly.
Mm-hmm.
They canceled Carnage.
Right.
Which
oh, yeah,
was
tell me
awesome.
About that. You said it was awesome. Book.
And I'm sure they're going to effing regret it now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They killed off a Fool Killer series
right.
and put it into a 5-issue mini.
Right.
And then after I think it was just 4 or 5, I think it was 5 of Kingpin.
Right.
Which was a slow burn but fantastic. They canceled that.
They're so and just, you got to learn from you guys have to learn from TV shows like Breaking Bad or Seinfeld. These shows, their first two seasons probably didn't do as well as they wanted to do.
Right.
But whoever was backing it, the you know whether it was who was it FX for who did or AMC for
AMC
yeah AMC
whether it's AMC or NBC whatever the networks backing these. Believe in your product or believe in your artists and your writers.
Or else why put it out there?
Yeah, or flat out just say. This is going to be a 5-issue, 1 of 5.
Right.
Say that.
Right.
Because it just makes you say, like, it's not, you know, we don't believe.
Yeah, we really believe what we're putting out.
Right. So, and to me, it's not even the diversity thing. It's just, like, you're giving us, like, comic book blue balls. Like, you're getting us so into this story or something like that, and then you just
and then
cut it short.
Cut it short.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Comic book blue balls. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. Whereas right now, we're talking about the Dark Age, it was like, okay, I don't need this much. Like, they're like, you want extra cheese in the pizza? You're like, yeah. They're like, well, if you like cheese, then you're going to get 12 cheeses. You're like, no, I just actually wanted the original extra cheese. And they're like, no, you're getting, like 30 different X-Men books, 30
right.
different Spider-Man books.
And then
and Marvel wasn't the only one. I'm sorry.
Right.
Marvel wasn't the only one to do it. DC did it. Now, granted, I think DC did it better
mm-hmm.
Because they had the Superman run. They had Superman, the Man of Steel, Adventures of Superman, and Action Comics, Superman in Action Comics.
Justice League Quarterly, Justice League Europe, Justice League Antarctica, Justice League, remember that shit?
Right, yeah. Batman, Shadow of the Bat, Legends of the Dark Knight,
Detective Comics,
regular Batman.
But I will say, yeah, I agree, at that point, they coalesced much better.
Yeah.
Than Marvel.
Yeah, and I think it was in the editing and in the writing, definitely. I mean, Chuck Dixon, again, love you, buddy, wrote the hell out of those Batman books. That dude was cranking that shit out.
And I agree with you. That was one of the biggest flaws with Marvel during this period of time, is that the writers were giving less and less, were having less and less influence. Mm-hmm. It was all about editors and then later, of course, the flashy artists that would become
Image. Oh, yeah.
And they're kind
and
of
they blew it with that because that's the one good thing they had going for them were these great artists, and then they lost them all.
Yeah.
And remember, after they left, it was a shitstorm of crappy art at that point. Like,
absolutely.
I think everything wasn't it around that time that everything started to turn towards the dark side of Marvel?
Right.
And I'm wondering if like all this stuff with the Darkhold and Sons of Midnight Suns, thank you. If all those characters came back. Because you didn't have to draw them well. Because
they didn't have any, like, real, what was it?
Talent.
Like, they didn't have, like, a fan base that would be like, you're not doing it right.
Right. Okay, yeah. So if Storm is not launching a freaking hurricane at you properly, then yes.
Nobody, you know, who's Morbius? I don't know who the hell he is. Just make him look really, you know, vampy, and he can be gaunt or whatever.
You raise a very good point, because that the Exodus.
Yeah.
Didn't cause this problem.
I'm wondering if that.
Shit art after
absolutely, and you're absolutely right.
Going from one of the best books artistically to one of the shittiest, and Spider-Man 2, just these people that you never heard of and you probably never saw again because they, you know, I mean, God bless them for
think about
work.
It. But and things got so bad to a point where they started asking some image guys to come back and pay them lots of money to do the artwork, like Heroes Reborn.
Right, and this is around the time we were talking about this before, Kevin. Where certain characters are like, these are our money characters.
Yes.
Put them in everything.
Yes.
Oh my God. If I saw another Punisher crossover.
Punisher?
It's funny you mentioned
Spider-Man.
That. Yeah. Punisher and Wolverine were like used the most. Like, and editors were told, hey, you want to make money? They were given incentives just to do this stuff. Uh-huh. Just throw Wolverine anything. Wolverine, Doctor Strange, and Mephisto or something like that. Uh-huh. You know, throw it together. We don't care. It's all about the flashy cover. If you have a cool cover, boom.
Well, and Ghost, when you were talking about the Dark World, when Ghost Rider came up, he got a lot of popularity. He was in everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying, there's that X-Men story when Jim Lee, I think it was as soon as Jim Lee left X-Men, actually. Oh my God, I didn't even put that together. I think it was right when Jim Lee left X-Men. They shoehorned this Ghost Rider crossover in where he gets like infested by the Brood, and it was just like it had nothing to do
with
what was coming, and then just ended. It was just like a two story thing, and that was it.
Just to sell books.
It was a filler. Yeah. DC did that recently with what was it, the Convergence series, the whole massive crossover thing.
Right.
And because I hate to say it, but all the talent was busy and they were moving, so they were like, well, let's just commission this out to people we don't normally. You know, work with, or that just can crank out a bunch of stuff.
Right.
So they gave it to a bunch of I don't want to say B-listers, but people that have been in the industry a while and can crank shit out.
Right.
Not necessarily always the best stuff in the world, but, you know, usually, workhorse, solid stuff. So they did this whole thing while they were moving. They did this whole crossover, and everybody just basically called it the crossover, cross the country crossover, basically, was what it was kind of called at that point, because it was just filler.
And now prior to this with the Image stuff, and it obviously carried over to Image too, but gimmicks.
Yes.
Polybagging.
Polybagging.
Is the one I will always be pissed at because it was literally stealing money from little kids.
Of course.
Because I was a collector, because it was also the prospecting market was huge at that point.
That's correct. So we'll get to that later. That's
so
right.
Every kid wanted to grab, I remember getting like, I have to get all the X-Force cards.
And that was the whole marketing scheme.
And
you had to get it all.
Not only that though, I had to get the five cards,
yes,
polybag, unopened, and then get one to open so I can read it.
Executioner's Song was a perfect example of that.
Did the same. I got so into the polybagging thing that I was like, gotta have the one in the polybag. Remember when Wizard magazine, Price Guide magazine,
that also made things go crazy.
I would get two polybags of a fucking Price Guide magazine
because
I wanted one to read and one to hold
on to. Well, okay, everybody did that, I think, with the Death of Superman.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a given.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But that was one of the first ones. Like, I'm talking like how they just
got it. It blew out of control. And even Wizard was also guilty of this because they would have their Price Guide and it would have list, you know, X-Force 1, cover C, cover D, cover I.
Yeah, and you know what's strange now is the fact that I've actually learned, and now, like, when there's, like, oh, there's a special $5 cover or there's a $3 regular, I'm like, newsstand regular, please. Thank
you. Oh, always.
You.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't even want the special, like, the only way I would is if it was just really cool looking or if they had no other option.
Right.
I'm not getting it for a collector's standpoint. I'm just getting it to read.
Right.
And I'll take the newsstand because, you know what, it's still going to be worth something eventually.
Right.
And if it's not, so I didn't waste a bunch of money.
And the reality now, years later, is we saw that it meant shit.
Right.
It meant nothing.
They're all in the quarter or even dime boxes.
All of them. Yeah.
Yep.
So fuck you, polybagging.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, everyone. Just wanted to mention real quick about a shop in Canoga Park, California called Spiro's Heroes. Elliot, the proprietor of the store, has over 300,000 books in what's called the Temple of Comics. That's Spiro Heroes in Canoga Park. Spirosheroes.com.
And to add to this was the, it kind of started in the 80s, but actually got out of control in the 90s. And even to this day, we still have this, the yearly crossover.
Yeah. And some good, some bad.
Some good, some bad. When it's mostly mediocre.
When it's forced, it sucks. When it's like, it's what you said, it's the yearly crossover time. Yes. And we have to have something.
All the time.
And of course, they manipulate the comic book readers, and this is going to change the Marvel
every
Universe
year.
Or whatever it is, DC forever.
And the Marvel Universe.
And I cringe every time Marvel says they're going to do it, because every time they do it, there's a price hike.
Of course.
It's like, oh no, what's it going up to $5 a book now?
Right, and which only meant, back then though, only meant what the never be the same was that somebody was going to die.
Yep.
And
be brought back later
they'll
on.
They'll be brought back later on.
So therefore, you diminished the point.
Right.
And the death of Superman was the at least on the DC side, was the beginning of that, where you make it sound like this is it. This is if and this is
that's
done.
True, because then they broke Batman, then they made Green Lantern crazy.
Right.
And then on Marvel's side, they did, you know, the Wolverine extraction of his...
Yes, his adamantium.
Colossus became bad.
Magneto goes brain dead for a certain period of time.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
You know, a lot of X-Men stuff, apparently.
Spider-Man,
stuff.
Of course, the worst thing of all was Spider-Man, which was to this day...
Oh, the fucking clone saga.
There's a big resurgence of that. In fact, the guy recently, I think he got his own book.
Ben Reilly?
Yeah. People that were little kids back then.
Some
actually
fucked up nostalgia,
Ben Reilly. Yeah, it's very strange.
He did have like a cool little uniform when he was like Spider-Man for a while. It was kind of cool, but
I didn't mind him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that he was that they originally pushed him as the original Spider-Man. That bugged the shit out.
They tried.
Yeah, because what they said, well, the Jackal, I think that was the thing, the Jackal made a clone or something like that. back in the mid-70s.
From the Punisher.
And, first of all, what you did was you upset so many people who collected 20 years worth of comics and said, oh, by the way, this wasn't really the real Peter Parker. Literally killed their sales.
Yeah, I swear we're not trying to suck DC's dick right now. The only time that actually really worked for me where they went back and kind of retweaked the past was Identity Crisis.
Yes.
Because they did it in a very interesting, creative, and real way. And at the same time, it made sense. They didn't fuck up the continuity industry.
Right. Yeah.
For once.
DC fuck up their continuity.
Yeah, when you take a character like Spider-Man and the character of Peter Parker, who's so beloved, and you do that, that is so disrespectful. That is like a kick in the face.
Well, it's what the New 52 did to me. It was just going like, all that stuff you read, didn't happen anymore. Never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's disrespectful.
Luckily, they did Flashpoint and saved their butts.
So real quick, I want to talk about a crossover that I did like. We are kind of bashing Marvel.
Go ahead, man.
But that was, and I don't think this one gets enough love, but it was Operation Galactic Storm.
Oh, yes.
It was a 19-part comic book crossover storyline, which ran through...
Did you say 19?
19 issues. Yeah, no, 19 parts. It went through the Avengers, the West Coast Avengers, Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Wonder Man, and Quasar.
Hmm.
And it was really well done. And I'll tell you a little bit about how it came to be and what it was involving. It involved the Avengers intervening in an intergalactic war between the alien Kree and Shi'ar empires. It's notable for its reigniting longstanding animus between Captain America and Iron Man. It brought pre-Civil War, obviously. And its impact upon the status quo for Marvel's alien empires, with the Shi'ar annexing the Kree Empire.
Mm.
So before you had, what was it, the Kree-Skrull War.
Kree-Skrull War, yeah.
This was, like, times 50. Like, I've read the Kree-Skrull War, and it's really good, and it still kind of holds up. But Operation Galactic Storm was the shit. It was devised by, as I told before, Mark Gruenwald, Bob Harris, and Fabian Nistic.
Son of a bitch, Fabian.
Fabian.
God damn it. Involved. Why does he keep worming his way into everything?
Fabian
also, ruining everything.
Fabian was very much heavily involved in the X-Men after.
He's like a giant bird that just pisses and shits all over everything.
I'm going to give him a pass on this one.
I'm going to put wings on your back.
He did a
Fabian.
Good job on this. Have mercy.
Ah, now, horse piss.
Now, this is what I like. This is so 90s, by the way. The title of the storyline is an allusion to Operation Desert Storm, mm-hmm. the Pentagon's operational title for the 1991 Gulf War, which had been recently resolved when the idea for Operation Galactic Storm was conceived. Although the phrase is featured in the storyline, it is the name the Avengers give their own deployment. The plot bears no real relation to the Gulf conflict. I mean, yeah, no shit. It's fucking in space. Come on. In fact, the crossover was in many ways a sequel to what I just said, the Kree-Skrull War. Mark Gruenwald had discussed the origins of the storyline as a Quasar story was expanded when he was a Marvel executive editor at that time and writer of Captain America and Quasar. The guy's a badass. So Bob and Fabian, your friends, they were looking for an appropriate plot for a proposed Avengers crossover. This, to me, was the Avengers crossover to end all crossovers. Basically, I'm just going to give you a streamlined version of it. The Kree and the Shi'ar, I think, have some misunderstanding, which, spoilers, you find out the Skrull were involved in.
Ooh. Of course.
But the Shi'ar, you think the Kree, now the Kree were these kind of like, everything about them is military-based.
So yeah, you got the Supreme Intelligence.
Yeah, the Supreme Intelligence, he plays a key part in that. Now, and then so that's another thing. So you think the Skrulls are behind it, but you actually find out that the Supreme Intelligence was behind this whole thing to get a war between the Shi'ar to eradicate the Kree so that, because he said he's, you know, the greatest minds of the Kree Empire and one, he said the Kree Empire has hit its plateau. It's not going anywhere. So the only way to start an evolutional change is to eradicate most of the populace. So he literally set it up so that the Shi'ar would bomb, they give this thing called a negabomb.
Oh, yes.
And it blows up the Kree Empire. Like, and for a while, this actually still like played into the Marvel, I think, to this day. It killed like almost all of, Venla, I forget the name of it, but it annihilated it. And it was this big moral Avenger story because, so before all this, the Avengers do one of those Avengers Assemble and call everybody in. They get every person, they start three teams. They have an Earth team, team going
Wind
to the Kree.
Team and fire.
No, not the elements. They have a team on Earth. No, it's not Captain Planet either. Earth, a team to go to, say, on Earth and protect it, a team to go to the Kree Empire, and a team to go to the Shi'ar Empire. And there are so many cool battles because obviously the Imperial Guard gets involved. There's an issue where Gladiator literally just beats the shit out of Wonder Man in like 2 seconds. It's really cool. Because remember, Wonder Man couldn't actually fly. He had to have that jetpack.
Mm-hmm.
So Gladiator just heat beams his jetpack. And Wonder Man's like, oh, fuck! And falls. And then Gladiator just pummels him. And then him and Thor go at it. It was just... And then the Kree had this Star Force. So they kind of made their own Imperial Guard. Just epic battle after epic battle. But at the end of it all, after the Kree Empire is pretty much decimated,
mm-hmm.
all the Avengers go and they have this big moral dilemma. Because half the team is like, that's there at that point, is like, we have to kill the Kree Supreme Intelligence. He's too dangerous. Like, look what he did to his own people.
People.
And and another group is like, no, we're the Avengers. We don't kill, you know, which is a big staple in comic books.
Right.
But this one rogue group, which the Black Knight was involved in and some other people, are like, nope. Black Knight's the one who actually kills him. He stamps his, like, his lightsaber
Boom.
Into his, like,
his
brain.
Lightsaber.
Yeah. Well, he had a little lightsaber at that point. He had his, like, sword. Yep. He kills the Supreme Intelligence.
Yeah, because Black Knight's not cool or anything.
No. He's just that badass who killed the Supreme Intelligence.
Yep.
But that story, to me, like, was one of those fun ones where it was, like, because it was 19 fucking parts, I remember just gathering up all the issues. And, of course, I'm a huge, like, Cosmic Imperial Guard fan, all that stuff. So to me, this is a crossover.
So Marvel made your childhood with that.
Made my childhood. And you can get it. I think there's two graphic novels. Operation Galactic Storm, Volume 1, Volume 2. Whole story in it. And it's fucking fun. It's just fun. Classic Avengers. And you get so many random Avengers. Like, U.S. Agent gets into
it. That's quite an adjective to describe it.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think the first book, or the first kind of series, for me it was The Death of Superman.
Right.
But I think the first kind of series where things crossed over.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of cements who you are.
Yeah.
You know, because for me it was Superman.
Right.
So that's who I was then. I was DC.
Right.
For the longest time. And I'm still a DC guy.
Right.
I don't get me wrong, I love certain Marvel titles that Marvel keeps canceling. Right. But I'm, you know, primarily a DC guy.
Right.
And you are primarily a Marvel guy.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting because you were you know, that was probably one of your first crossovers.
Totally, yeah.
And, you know, Death was mine. And what about you?
And as a child, I was mostly Marvel. I was a little DC as well, but I was mostly Marvel as well. For
I'm
me,
I'm guessing, was it Infinity?
X-Men. Actually, I'm sorry. You're right. You're absolutely right. Infinity Gauntlet was my first crossover. You're absolutely right. I forgot about that. Yes. Infinity Gauntlet was the first time I ever saw characters like Thanos and Adam Warlock. I was like, man, these guys are really cool. And then the fact I see this amazing gauntlet with all these gems and have these different powers and abilities, like, wow, this is really cool. And the artwork from George Perez.
I will say, too, around at least this 90s time, like the early mid 90s, X-Men were on fire with their crossovers because they had like Extinction Agenda. Executioner song was good.
Fatal Attractions
was great.
And then the peak of it all, in my opinion, was the little small four-part Legion Quest. Which led to the death of Xavier, which created the Age of Apocalypse, which was pretty damn good.
Which to me was the first alternate parallel universe story that actually
worked sense.
And was like, oh shit.
Had ramifications.
Was cool, yeah.
Had ramifications and created characters that you're like, let's keep these around.
X-Men, Dark Beast.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Sugar Man.
Now, we've talked about these crossovers and stuff, but let's talk about some, what I like to call, Marvel misfires.
Oh, there's plenty of those.
And I love this section. This is stuff I live for, guys.
Go ahead, man.
I got a few misfires from that era that Marvel thought was a good idea.
Shitbirds,
exactly. Robert Townsend created a fictional superhero, of course. He wrote, directed, and starred in a movie called Meteor Man. So Marvel thought it was a good idea to team up with Townsend and create a 6-part miniseries called Meteor Man. Now, this came out in 1993, I believe. And Meteor Man would meet the likes of course, Spider-Man, and randomly Night Thrasher.
Because he was hot in the New Warriors at that time.
Yeah, probably. And Meteor Man is a formerly cowardly school teacher, Jefferson Reed, who witnessed a robbery by two kids who were trying to join the local gang. After hiding in a dumpster to evade the members, he emerges and is struck by a chunk of green meteor that grants him superpowers.
Lame.
Yeah. Kind of, but you know, whatever. It sounds like Smallville. Smallville stole plot ideas.
Or like a happy version of the Creepshow. Remember Creepshow when Stephen King gets the meteor, but he gets like moss all over him?
Yeah. I remember that. So it's kind of like that. So that was one. Here's another one that really puzzled me. No Escape. Do you remember that? It was Ray Liotta.
Oh my! They did a comic for that movie?
Lance Hendrickson like and prison, Ernie Hudson. Like, yes.
Yeah, I didn't know they made a comic for that.
It was released in some countries.
Wow.
Titled Escape from Absalom. It was a 1994 action science fiction movie. Hey. I think it was either PG-13 or rated R.
Martin Campbell directed it.
That was where Ray Liotta fucked up his career. I mean, Ray Liotta's great. But he did that like right after Goodfellas. Like, so he had Goodfellas, which was amazing.
Yeah, and this was another starring role, and he had no idea.
Yeah.
I love No Escape.
Yeah?
To be honest, it's perfect 90s cheese. It's fantastic.
I'm sure, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's definitely something you can go back, revisit, and very much enjoy.
I saw it in the theater as a kid. I saw Meteor Man, too.
Director, Martin Campbell. GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Casino Royale. Two of the best Bond films ever made.
Yeah.
And Campbell,
over the last 30 years.
No? Yeah.
Yes. And he also did Green Lantern.
Oh. Anyway,
this is a story set in a dystopian future, basically where a former Marine who's serving life imprisonment on an island inhabited by savage and cannibalistic prisoners. It was shot in Queensland, Australia, and Marvel thought it was a good idea to make a comic out of it. Same thing with Darkman, guys.
Yep, yeah.
1990, Sam Raimi wanted to do... He basically wanted to do like a Batman type film, but couldn't get the rights.
He should do a Spider-Man. Oh, never mind.
Yeah. So he basically created his own character called Darkman.
Oh, he created him?
Yeah.
You know that? Okay.
It's based on a short story Raimi wrote that paid homage to Universal's horror films of the 1930s. The film starred Liam Neeson. A scientist is attacked and left for dead by a ruthless mobster, Robert Durant, played by the late, great Larry Drake. After his girlfriend and attorney Francis McDormand,
McDormand.
There we go. Runs afoul of corrupt developer Colin Freels. So basically, Darkman is this guy. He's a scientist that gets his shit beat out of him and blown up, and then he comes back unable to feel anything, but with the technology to change his face.
So he was kind of like a Lon Chaney.
Kind of, yeah.
As far as the homage to the monster.
There you go.
Yeah.
That would make sense. So Marvel also thought that was a good idea. And I'll tell you what, I was in it. Not the movie, but I was in the series. I was in it to win it. I was ready to read it and rock and roll. Unfortunately, it seemed a little too dark. My parents would not buy it for me.
That was like when I had my parents record Toxic Avenger for me. And I had no idea what it was. I was like, oh, it looks like a cool comic guy.
Yeah.
And they watched it to like, you know, because they were good parents.
Right.
And they woke up the next morning and they're like, you are not. You are never saying that film.
Because number four on my list.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not fucking kidding. Toxic Crusaders.
All right, that was the segue of all fucking segues.
I know.
By the way, all that did was make me want to see it more, and I did. Sorry, Mom and Dad.
They did a cartoon based off of the Toxic Avenger. Now, this was an animated series. It featured Toxie, they called him, the lead character of the films, leading a group of misfit superheroes who combat pollution.
How did this happen?
So it was like a misfit Captain Planet, really.
But also, if you watch, I mean, really, watch Toxic Avenger. It's, Trauma. It's so violent. Like, you can't believe that they actually were like, let's appeal to kids.
And it worked. There was nudity and decapitations in the movies. Yes.
Well, that's why your parents are like, you're not watching this at all.
Marvel Comics released an 8-issue comic book series. It had no regular writer. Here's the best part. Each issue was written by such notables as Steve Gerber, and Nicosenti, David Leitch, and Jeremy Banks, and David Michelinie.
So they were just like walking through. They're like, oh, hey, Steve, real quick, before you turn to that other issue, you feel like doing a Toxic Crusader?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure. Am I getting paid? Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'll do it.
Now, issue number 8. This is the best part. I love Wikipedia for this. Issue number 8 was the only mainstream U.S. comic book ever published to carry an approved by the Comic Code Authority stamp, while at the same time featuring a man who sat on a toilet defecating.
Wow. Comics Code, you are fucking worthless.
So, just the more you know.
Yeah.
That leads me to number 5 on my list, ALF.
Oh, alien life form.
Near and dear to my heart, ALF ran for 50 issues, gentlemen.
50.
ALF was part of the line that
you're
thought.
You're fucking kidding me.
No,
50 issues.
50 issues.
That's 4 years, 2 months.
I had the last issue. I've had it since I was a little kid.
Mm. I remember getting those in like the packs.
You could get them in the pack. Yeah. And I just recently acquired the first issue, and I'm like, I don't have them all, but I got the first and the last, and I was kind of happy about that.
No, I don't want to brag, but I do an amazing impression of the dad in ALF.
Really?
Really?
I would do it real quick. ALF, could you not eat the cat, please? That's it.
Not bad.
That's pretty good. And one other quick one I want to bring up is the Phantom 2040.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Now, the reason why I bring this one up is because it's from the makers of Aeon Flux.
Oh, shit, yeah.
From, it was the
MTV show.
Liquid Television
original, very dark adult series that they thought, let's do the same kind of dark, odd animation style with stories that are dark and just put it on Saturday morning. that'll work.
Totally.
It didn't work, but it did spawn a Sega Genesis game that I still to this day think was pretty awesome.
And a film with Charlize Theron, right?
Yes, I believe
like,
so.
One of those ones that was way after its time. Like when they did the He-Man movie. It was
Aeon Flux. Yeah,
way after its time.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the Phantom came around this time because the movie, you know, they were trying to tie it to the movie.
Oh, you mean Billy Zane?
Oh, yeah, that's Billy Zane. Phantom? And Catherine Zeta-Jones.
That's right.
And James Remar.
Right. I love James Remar.
Yeah.
And it's funny you mentioned this because this is what leads to the crash of 1996 in comics, especially at Marvel, where you had these unfortunate things where too many books were made. Exactly. Multiple variant covers. Like you said, the poly bags.
Overkill.
Absolute overkill. And during this time, Marvel decided to have their own little distribution company. Once again, that they haven't had like in 40 years or so, called Heroes World.
And this thing did gangbusters on fucking opposite day.
Yes, it was poorly, poorly conceived. They basically had a system where they didn't have a full, complete infrastructure to distribute books and end up screwing retailers over to a point they didn't have their phone center correctly set up. And basically, books got delayed and comic shops suffered greatly. And it basically led to so many comic shops having to close that... It, you know, continued with the crash. And of course, the other companies involved, Image, so forth and so on, were doing similar things that this led to bankruptcy for Marvel.
Yeah,
in it hurt late 1996.
My local comic book company hurt them a lot, but I don't think they ever fully recovered, and that's why they eventually went under.
Really? Mine's went under too. Yeah, my comic shop that I grew up with went under too.
My only effect of that was my parents for a birthday present got me and my brother Marvel stock. Like right before they went bankrupt.
That was smart.
And then they went they went bankrupt. Oh, and it was worth nothing.
But had you held on to it for you know?
I don't want to talk about that.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about that. I just want my unemployment checks.
It's a serious thing.
Yeah. So with that, I think that's going to wrap up the Dark Age. And it was dark on many reasons, right? I mean, Indeed. It was dark in tone, and it was dark as far as the business kind of got a little too much. And it fucked it wasn't
quality was going down.
Quality went down and the fans paid for it. And sadly some stores as well. So with that happy note, we're going to ask you to subscribe. We're going to ask you to
Yes, please check our Instagrams. Please check us out. Our SmackDown Sundays are awesome on Facebook on our Real Short Box page. Find us on there. iTunes.
Yeah, iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you subscribe, rate and review it too if you have the opportunity, because I think that's, you know, what helps us get a little more play. And with that, we'll see you at the ones that are open still.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.